And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Welcome to this week's Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. I'm joined by Sam Lee. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
Now, as usual, City have gone and torpedoed the best laid plans and all that, Sam, because we started a podcast on Monday this week.
We finished it, basically.
We basically finished a podcast on Monday, just at the point at which news broke that City were in breach. Well, in fact, I'll let you pick up the story, because you're the one that's been working on it over the last 24 hours or so. What's going on?
I'm already at the stage of fallout rather than laying out what has actually happened already. So as everybody kind of knows by now, the Premier League's investigation, which has gone on for 4 years, has led to charges, 115 charges, relating to basically bookkeeping. It's Premier League rules, so you have to act in good faith. They say City haven't. It relates to balance sheets and all this kind of stuff. There's Mancini's payments, which people will maybe remember from the Al Jazeera, Der Spiegel, UEFA process, you know, where it was claimed that Mancini's payments were half put through Al Jazeera, which is also owned by, you know, a football club also owned by Abu Dhabi United Group. There's stuff in these Premier League charges about player remuneration and, you know, basically bonuses and image rights and were they declared properly. And then there's other stuff saying that they didn't fulfill FFP obligations to UEFA, which obviously, you know, they've kind of been dealt with. Dealt with as far as possible anyway, as far as the Court of Arbitration for Sport is concerned. And then also the Premier League sustainability laws, they're saying they didn't or wouldn't have complied with those either. So there's that. And then they say from 2018, when the investigation began, they say City haven't cooperated with that. So there's 30-odd charges relating to not cooperating. So yeah, quite a few things. And obviously why it's such a big story and why it's captured everyone's imagination, because you've got rival fans wanting this and City fans dreading this, but the punishments are endless, basically. It could be anything, including, you know, relegation. So, yeah. And of course, loads of people have reacted to that in different ways. You know, you get some City fans saying, yeah, bring it on, let's go to the Championship and storm back and all that kind of thing. And obviously, you know, loads of people desperate that doesn't happen. It's pretty bombshell, isn't it? Like, it's the biggest, you know, it's a kind of Italian football-style scandal in terms of the allegations. This is the biggest kind of scandal to hit the Premier League ever. But of course, City have said in their statement that, you know, they're looking forward to setting the record straight, basically, once and for all.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not a public thing. I was digging around plenty yesterday, which is why we're coming back to this on Tuesday. And, you know, that confidence is not a public thing. It's not show a strong face, but behind the scenes, they're, you know, putting on parachutes and putting out fires. Like, they genuinely do believe that, okay, it'd be fine. So I'm sure we'll get into that. But yeah, it's this, I've done a lot of media and it's all, oh, this is terrible. Like, this, and it reminds you, like, this is a massive situation. But like, the conversations I had yesterday, by last night, I was kind of thinking, all right, they'll probably be all right then. Please don't hang on those words. But that, I'm just trying to.
Too late, I am.
I'm just trying to. That is aggregated. But it's just trying to kind of relay the confidence within City. But again, you know, they were confident about FFP, but they did get banned in the end. But then that confidence kind of ultimately saw through at CAS. I know we're kind of covering everything now, but they can't appeal to CAS this time, which was tweeted out by Martin Ziegler and, you know, seen a million times or whatever. And everyone was like, oh God, well, they've got no chance then. But then you think, hold on a minute, surely they can appeal.
Yeah, there must be a legal recourse. Yeah,
they can appeal. They can ask for another panel, another independent panel to go through everything and do it all again. So that wouldn't be a short process either. I mean, there's almost no point in thinking about that, but if they were to be found guilty and then appealed then, and then that rumbled on for another year or so, that wouldn't be, well, it would be a mess. Like, what would happen to any of those punishments? If they did get relegated, would that be put on hold until the end of the appeal? That's when you would get other clubs saying, no, they need to be relegated now, which is, you know, the nine-club letter last time where they wrote to Cass saying, no, they need to be banned from the Champions League now, don't let them delay. So, it will, you know, there is the potential for it to get incredibly messy. But, you know, see, they'll be confident sending in all their lawyers and all their paperwork that they'll be able to deal with it in one go. And the, like, that nobody knows, but we will see.
Yeah, this, I mean, all of this dates, the dates of the allegations to begin with are from, basically from when the Premier League's sustainability rules came in, isn't it, in 2009-10. It's around about that time that they started them, up to 17-18. So it's like beyond 17-18, is it just failure to comply?
Yes, it is, yeah. That's exactly it. It's failing to comply with the investigation. You know, City say they have. The Premier League say they haven't. You know, the thing is, you know, if we're talking about this taking years, and one of the things that came across while I was speaking to people around City on Monday was this could take years. You know, I was asking like to agents, I was like, have they spoken to you yet? And they were like, no. But no, nothing to do with me. No, they haven't done that. And you know, there was some. They were like, "There's just a feeling that it's business as usual because this isn't going to affect anything for so long."
Yeah.
Now it's now this independent panel is apparently going to be put together by the end of the month. The other teams in the league, according to reports, want this to be done by the end of the season. Now, you know, maybe that is the case. I think there's just such a weight of, a way of things to get through. You know, there's so much paperwork that's going to need to be submitted. And look, I think it's fair to say City aren't going to make it easy if it comes to that. Look, and maybe in terms of handing over the paperwork, they'll just go, well, here you go. But they have had legal challenges already over the last few years trying to stop this investigation in the first place. You know, they said there was the Premier League had no jurisdiction to investigate them. And they said that the investigation was biased, and that got thrown out, and the judge said you can't appeal, and they went to another judge and said, can we appeal? And the other judge went, oh, go on then. And then that appeal got rejected, and then both the Premier League and City tried to stop all of these legal things being released to the public, but a judge said, no, this can be released because it's public interest. Like, City have already been fighting this. They've already been making things difficult. So if it comes to it, it's not just necessarily going to be fighting it with appeals if they're found guilty, but you know, they could potentially make the situation difficult as it goes along. So that's, you know, that's why it kind of it really could take forever to sort out. I guess that's what the other clubs want to stop happening. But at the same time, that letter that Guardiola only referenced last Friday, that was co-signed by the nine clubs, that was to Cass, wasn't it, saying, don't let them delay this.
Yeah, yeah.
And be able to play in the Champions League in the first place. But City had no intention of delaying it, in fairness. City actually wanted to get on with it as soon as possible. And, you know, they had the hearing in June. And this was in the pandemic, so everything was delayed anyway in terms of the football season. They had the hearing in June, and the statement came out at the start of July. And that letter was completely redundant. So again, I've just said there that City may try and delay things, but I mean they have already in this case. But it is also fair to say that with the Cass thing, yeah, the other clubs were like, oh, they're going to try and delay, they're going to try and get in the Champions League, like while they appeal. But that wasn't actually what City wanted. They wanted to kind of get on with it, and like there's almost this kind of like sick approach to like, okay, yeah, we'll bring it on. Like, let's clear our name again. Like, you wouldn't want this. You wouldn't want this situation. And obviously, City would rather they weren't in this situation.
No,
but,
I did.
They are. They're kind of like, oh, well, bring it on.
Yeah, I did laugh at the statement, which basically said, you know, we welcome this opportunity to clear our name. It was something along those lines, wasn't it? And my reaction was, well, like I get it. I get that's kind of what you have to say, and you have to kind of put that out there. But equally, I'm sure like they would more like what they would welcome more would be the Premier League going, actually, there's no case to answer here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That would be pretty well welcome. But like, it even extends to. So, obviously, with the UEFA and CAS thing, there was the time-barred element where UEFA's own rules said any alleged breaches that happened more than 5 years ago at the time of the charges couldn't be examined because they were time barred, and that was in UEFA's own rules.
Statutes,
and so
yeah.
Cass went, oh, well, you can't do this because you've said yourself that we can't go over all ground, basically. The Premier League doesn't have that. So on the face of it, you'd go, oh, well, that's bad for City. But I mean, the thing that, if you remember our kind of...
We said this afterwards, didn't we, in the Cass thing, where we said in the aftermath of it, we didn't know how much of it was thrown out because it was time barred and how much of it was unproven.
Because I think if you did read through it all, what I was going to say was some of it was time barred. But the thing was, with that Cass verdict, the whole, I can't remember what the name of it was, but the written reasons, effectively, when that came out, everyone had their own take on it. And obviously a lot of City fans took it as, well, we've done nothing wrong whatsoever. And a lot of rival fans were like, well, you just got off on a technicality. And that, you know, neither of those things were true. You know, there was stuff in there that wasn't great for City. There was stuff in there that wasn't great for UEFA. But obviously City, of the main stuff, they overturned it. And, you know, the fine for not cooperating, you know, they'll take all day. Old ground, obviously, but they didn't believe the process was right. And they were like, well, we're not going to give you the stuff because we don't believe you're going to handle it fairly. And then we'll give it to Cass and we'll sort it. And that ultimately, that's what happened. But what I was going to say was, there was stuff that wasn't time barred that City managed to overturn anyway.
That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah. But the situation here is, because there's no like kind of time barred stuff for Premier League rule breaches or alleged rule breaches, you'd think, oh, okay, well, that's difficult. But on the one hand, you've got, well, City overturned stuff that wasn't time barred anyway. But on the other, you've, in terms of this kind of almost sick attitude, like City are like, well, we're gonna get this overturned now, and also our rivals won't be able to say there's a technicality, because it's almost like they're thinking rival clubs are saying that City have only got off with this because, you know, because it was time barred, because it was technicality, and, you know, that they got lucky, basically. So the thing's almost now is like, you can't have any excuses now. Like, if City get found not guilty, or, you know, they get found guilty but then appeal it and then not guilty, whatever, they'll be like, well, look, you've got nowhere to hide now. Obviously, the flip side of that is it could go against City, and then, like, basically the whole world caves in as far as City is concerned. But, I mean, it's just so hard to imagine either outcome.
Yeah.
Like, if City get found guilty, then it is, like, proper Juventus-style Calciopoli, relegated, you know, title stripped madness, like just full-on madness. And it's hard to ever, I mean, you say it's hard to look at the club in through the same lens ever again, and I know Juve have only just, you know, Juve have had another punishment, but Juve kind of came back and everyone kind of forgot about it, whether in Italy it still follows them around, but, you know, whenever they play Champions League games, nobody really goes, oh yeah, there's a Calciopoli club. Like, football kind of moves on. So maybe there's that element in 15, 20 years later, it'd be fine. But like, if City were found guilty, you know, it would be massive. But at the same time, if City were found not guilty, it's hard to imagine, purely because what are people going to say if City found not guilty? Like, people have already made their minds up.
I was going to say this. At this point,
it's corruption, or they paid off the panel, or whatever.
At this point, all that happens now is, if City are found not guilty, surely everybody else just goes, well, there's no smoke without fire. And then, like, their minds are made up, and it doesn't really matter. Now, if City are found guilty, well, then it's like, oh, well, there you are. Our case is proven. So ultimately, like, for me as a fan, like, it's a really weird position right now. Because, like, I thought I would care a lot more than I do. And I don't know if that's me being flippant or me being bullish or anything like this. But, like, the way I say it is, we just kind of live with whatever the outcome is here. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not unduly worried about kind of what City are supposed to have done, or what the allegations say that City have done here. And like, I get that it's huge, and I get that it's like massive scandal for the Premier League, and everybody else would be upset by it. Is it weird that I don't really care? I'll still be a fan.
You know, there's a million different City fans, and there'll be a million different ways to think about anything, whether it's a signing or a performance or a sacking or or a big like charge like this.
They've basically spent if they're guilty, they've basically spent more money than what the rules that were brought in 2009 say they should have done, and I just can't really get that worked up by that. And like, I get why other fans would be upset by that, and I get why rival fans would be upset by that, but I'm just like, yeah.
And I suppose that there's the other thing as well. Like, again, if we're talking about zooming out and looking 15, 20 years into the future or whatever, we've had this whole typical City narrative of, you know, York away to this, you know, super team and Guardiola and everything. It would probably be the most typical City to be back at York away, wouldn't it? Like nobody, you know, whenever people talk about that, nobody ever thinks it's going to go back to that now. And like rightly so, why would you? And even if they did have to go down to the Championship, I'm sure they'd be back within a couple of years. Obviously, this is purely hypothetically speaking. But why I say that obviously is you've had the fans who were there for that, and you've had fans who maybe weren't old enough for that, but they were there when City were just lower half of the Premier League, you know, the Stuart Pearce days, no home goals for the second half of the season, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even like, you know, the kind of 2008, 2009 period where there wasn't an awful lot to shout about. But, you know, the fans were there for that and they're there for this now. And it's, you know, the whole, well, we've been there for thick and thin. You know, maybe if there's thin coming up, as you were saying in terms of your feelings about it.
I'll still be there.
They will still be there, yeah. Exactly. And I mean, this is something I've seen a lot of fans say as well. Like, in terms of, you know, I said, oh yeah, bring it on, get us down to the Championship. All that kind of stuff. There's also, you know, there was part of that was get us down to the Championship and let's get rid of some of the hangers on fans that we've got. Now, I'm not, you know, I can't say anyone's a hanger on or not, but it's like if that were to be the case, like you say, what you're saying here is you'll still be a fan, whatever.
Yeah, happens. I'll still be a City fan, whatever happens. Yeah,
you'll still go to the game, still be a City fan.
Still see my mates. It's like,
and
yeah.
I guess that's going to be. That'll be the thing for many people, and if some people want to disappear, then they will do. But you know, I think we've seen over the years, for better and for worse, and I'm certainly not kind of glorifying it, because when I say for worse, you know, I've been on the end of I've never had like major abuse, really. I've never had DMs, like threats or anything like that. But you know, it can be a shit place to be online sometimes, covering City when you're perceived to be a United fan. But you see people from all over the world with this deep connection to City. And again, you know, the way that people defend the club online over anything and how vociferously they do it, you would think that, yeah, like if this doesn't go City's way, they will still be there. But like I say, it's just kind of, there's just a million different things to consider. And like, there's not necessarily a million different outcomes, but it's just the main outcomes just spawn off a million different other things. Like it's truly crazy.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You've said a couple of times about potential punishments, and I guess what, we're not prejudging the outcome here in terms of talking about what the punishments could be if a guilty verdict comes along. But let's say the situation happens. City are found guilty. They appeal. The appeal is unsuccessful. The only thing you said that concerned me in the punishments was stripping of titles. Is that a realistic possibility?
It's just a realistic possibility in the sense that in the Premier League rule book or handbook, there's a wide range of punishments, and basically anything's on the table. Like, to highlight it, one of the potential punishments is they could be ordered to replay matches. Now, what are they going to do? Get the 2011-12 team back together and play against everyone else? That's it. Like, it's not going to happen. It's not feasible. It's possible, but it's not feasible. And it's almost like, you know, there have been a few. I don't know what the Premier League punishments will be. I've been asking around at City how, what their response is. I don't know at the Premier League what's likely. And I know the Premier League, they don't really comment on this stuff. I've seen a couple of tweets from reporters saying it's probably not going to be retroactive. And then you see what the Premier League rivals want. You know, there's that story in The Sun about some senior figure at another club saying they should be relegated. It's almost like there's more of an appetite, not necessarily that they're going to get their own way because this panel will decide, but there's almost an appetite to get relegated in the future, like make it a current punishment or a future punishment rather than a retrospective one. But I mean, all I can say is it's on the table, but whether they're actually going to
seriously
apply that or not,
yeah,
I don't know. But again, it's like you could see it, because if they do go, oh yeah, well, they are guilty of doing this, and it's all these seasons and this affected balance, and it's like, okay, yeah, well, none of those trophies count. Now, it's interesting actually that you say that's one of the things you're worried about, because along the same line of you'll still be a City fan and you're not too worried about it, and you know, you'll still see your mates and all that kind of thing, it's like, obviously it's difficult, but those moments still happened. Like,
yeah. And
as much as they literally will, the silverware will be taken away. Like, that Aguero moment still happened.
That's it.
I'm sure they can't take, again, this is hypothetical, in the event of a guilty verdict, but not just a guilty verdict, but one where they decide to strip titles, because the two don't necessarily go hand in hand. But even if they did do that, I don't think that would apply to the post-2018 ones, because not cooperating with the investigation is not enough to strip titles.
Yeah.
You know, that's a fine, you know, because they got fined by, you know, when they came out of the CAS verdict, they were in the Champions League, but they had to pay like 10 million because they didn't cooperate, which is like, okay, they're fine with. So they wouldn't lose the most recent, Guardiola ones. But, you know, those, because I'm just thinking the Villa, you know, basically the point is that Villa game still happened. That Aguero moment still happened. And it's like, you've still got those memories. But yeah, I mean, of course, it's, I don't know, like...
Was it in the Shawshank Redemption?
What's the analogy for that? Oh, go on. Yeah, go
on. Was it in the Shawshank Redemption where he said... Where was it Andy Dufresne who said... or was it Red who said basically that they can lock us in, but they can't take what we've got up here? And he points to his head and he's like basically saying, I've got my imagination, so that's where I go every night, sort of thing. I've not seen the Shawshank Redemption in years. I can't remember.
I was just thinking, like, it might just be like a relationship that goes bad. It's like, you had wonderful times, but then you look at it and you just go, oh, like,
didn't end, like, well, did it?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a better analogy, I think, than a film I can't really remember.
We're not being kept around for our references, are they? They're just pure, obscure British 90s sitcoms. But anyway, it's crazy, isn't it, the whole thing? But again, it's like, this is going to... It bubbled up yesterday, it erupted yesterday like an absolutely ginormous volcano, and it, you know, spewed hot lava everywhere for a day. And now, you know, we're still talking about it now, and it's still kicking off. And obviously, you know, there's this talk of the panel being put together soon. But, you know, next week, you've got Arsenal. After that game, people will be talking about what happened on the pitch. And this is not me trying to downplay it. I'm just saying, it's like the UEFA stuff. Like, it will now go quiet for a long period. And maybe when that panel's put together, there'll be a story on it. You know, these are the people. And you go, right, okay. And then you talk about it again. And then it's like, okay, well, it's like, I don't know, Leipzig next week. So think about that. You know, the daily cycle of football will go on. The matches will go on. The press conferences will go on. This will go on. And all of this will go along in the background until it blows up again in the future. But that could be a long time away. So yeah, it's like, this is just going to be, you know, City as a club kind of know how to deal with this when the charges landed, because it was like, you know, it's almost like they do, you know, in 18 months, they might just do a fire drill. They might do a code red. Like, we've been charged with something else just to keep them on their toes in case it happens again. You know, they they know how to do this from the UEFA things. They've been through this. And also, I think City fans really know how to kind of live with this. You know, it's there, but it's not. You've got so much other stuff to focus on in terms of actual football that you don't need to think about it until it becomes relevant again. And when it becomes relevant again, could be a long way off in the future.
Yeah, just a couple of questions surrounding all of this and times and stuff, Sam, as well. I don't know if you'll know, and like, apologies if you don't know, but like, in terms of the hearing itself, I'm guessing it's kind of, I'm guessing it's behind closed doors. I'm guessing it's not like a trial at a Crown Court or whatever. It's not going to be public to be heard.
No, we're
not going to get consistent.
I may be wrong, but I don't believe it is. No, exactly.
And the other angle was just in terms of any potential punishments in the event of a guilty verdict. Are they decided by the Premier League, or are they decided by the panel, or does the Premier League put it forward and then the panel goes, "Yes, this is accepted"?
Yeah, I think the panel work within what's in that Premier League handbook, and that's why there's such a wide range. You know, that's why, you know, there's other things like the contract could be cancelled. You know, of certain players who were signed in those periods. And you know, that obviously a lot of those have gone, but I think De Bruyne was signed in that period, for example. So it's like that's why it's so wide ranging. But yeah, the panel would decide kind of in line with the parameters of what they're allowed to decide. They couldn't, because I don't think, I may be wrong here, I don't think a transfer ban is in that list of punishments, or certainly the list of punishments that I've seen drawn up. Like, maybe it's in there somewhere, but the different ones that I've seen posted around didn't include a transfer ban. So if that's the case and there isn't a transfer ban possible, the panel can't say, "Oh, yeah, give them a transfer ban," because it's not in those parameters. But, you know, all that mental stuff that we've talked about is like relegation and stripping titles and stuff.
Yeah, that could fall under the... I mean, there wasn't one of the options, whatever the panel deems fit or whatever the Premier League deems fit. And I was like, that could just fall under that, couldn't it? It's like, it's so open-ended, that kind
of
final.
Well, that's it. That's why, you know, you need this independent panel to judge it properly, judge all the evidence. And if, like, you know, City have said publicly in this statement and, like, behind the scenes, and I don't just mean, like, media briefings, because look if you were a City fan listening to this and you were maybe looking for some comfort or something, you know I'm not trying to give anyone comfort, you know, with football sometimes that is the case, and you know, on the second half of this podcast when we're talking about the Spurs game, there might be a little bit of that, although it feels like a long time ago now. That Spurs performance was shite, so I'm not trying to sugarcoat that, but I'm not trying to kind of reassure anyone that this is going to be all right. But if people are listening to me for that, and it's like, oh, well, you know, who have you spoke to? That kind of thing. And if, you know, you couldn't come on and say, oh, well, City have believed they're fine and they think everything's going to be okay, just based on what, like, the media department say, or even what, like, Al Mubarak and Soriano tell the players, because that's basically like a public front, isn't it? That is a front to be like, don't worry, we'll fight this. It's, you know, it's going to be all right. You know, you couldn't put much stock in that if that was just empty words delivered, you know, to the media or to the players to kind of reassure them, or to anyone to reassure them. But like, genuinely,
you've spoken to City who genuinely feel,
yeah, people who genuinely feel that they're going to be all right. And again, like, that might be misplaced. But all I can say is, you know, this stuff coming out about, you know, they think, well, basically they think they'll win, but also that they think, you know, the Premier League have rushed it out and all this kind of stuff. Like, that is, it's genuine. It's not a public front designed to appease City fans or the players. Like, it is genuinely what they believe. I mean, yeah. And again, this is what they had during the whole FFP thing, wasn't it? That's why they were so kind of bullish. And, you know, there's that Guardiola quote that's been pulled out loads, hasn't there? You know, when I think he said it in May, but he said it loads of times, but he must have said it more succinctly in May, or it was just the one that more people remember, when he was like, look, if they lie to me, I'm gone and I won't be their friend anymore, which he did say during the process as well. And now everyone's pulled that out again as if to say, oh, well, you have to go, aren't you? And it's like, well, the other context of that is he was saying, I trust them, and I was right to trust them.
Yeah.
And it's the same situation now, basically.
I have thought about this from the other side as well, because given the fallout of Monday and everything that has been said about this, kind of commentators from various media, from pundits to ex-players to kind of fans of other clubs to like journalists who cover other clubs, that sort of thing. I'm sensing quite an appetite for City to be punished, in the sense of it almost doesn't really matter whether they're guilty or not in kind of like some quarters, and there's almost this kind of eagerness or giddiness for like to pull out these moments where Guardiola said stuff like that, and ultimately what it led me to was the question: what if City aren't guilty? Like, what happens next? What happens to the Premier League and the whole kind of to English football if the panel come back and say basically, well, there's no case to answer.
I say nothing.
Like, nothing's happened.
We've already kind of touched on it, haven't we? Like, if City were not guilty, then, the people who have made their mind up already would not have their mind changed. Like, they didn't with Cass. And that's kind of why I kind of see what City mean when they're thinking, okay, well, there's no time barred element now, so people can't have any excuses anymore. But, it's football fans on Twitter. There doesn't have to be logic. There doesn't have to be reason. It's just what you wake up and decide to feel. So, yeah, if City get any punishment overturned or just get found not guilty, it won't change anything. It's funny in a way. City are like, oh, we welcome the opportunity to clear our name. It's like, well, obviously, clearly, officially, you will, but fans won't care. Never mind fans, though. The other clubs won't care either. Like Tebas' statement yesterday, he was like, look, we said this years ago, why is it taking the Premier League so long? And he was like, we're saying they're still doing it now. Will the Premier League take so long again to look into it? And, other clubs are convinced that it's happening as well. And if the Premier League panel, well, the independent panel, rules against the Premier League and in favour of City, or if there's appeal and they rule in favour of City, that's not going to change anybody's mind. When you said, what does English football look like? Instinctively, I thought, well, nothing's going to change. Like, it would just carry on. But then you think, is this where the Super League starts coming back into it? And obviously, the mad thing about the Super League was obviously City signed up. But part of it, like a big part of it, was the clubs who were in charge of that Super League could dictate, like, the spending limits. They could basically bring in their own version of FFP that was to be determined at a later point, and City signed up to that. Now, imagine the Super League went ahead, and maybe if City are found not guilty, the other clubs are so pissed off they don't even invite them, potentially. Just in terms of like wild thinking of how things might pan out 5-10 years down the line. Like, they either don't invite them because they're that pissed off about it and they want to go and start something else, or like City sign up like they did last time, and then they go, okay, yeah, well, these are the spending limits, and they just make up something that's completely arbitrary. Like, who's to say that the spending limits are going to be fair? Everyone gets their cut, everyone gets their share, everyone makes their money. I mean, there's almost no point in competing anyway once it gets to a Super League. Like, who cares if you win it or not? But what happens to English football if City are not guilty? Chances are everyone will just be really annoyed. Everyone will be like, I'm really annoyed. That's a massive understatement, but at least I haven't sworn again. But I mean, what is there then? Like, there's nothing. famous. I mean, do I even want to finish this sentence? But like, what else could come? What else could come next? Like, because a lot of this is still, the smoking gun for this was the Der Spiegel leaks. Like, what else could there be? Like, would there be more leaks that spark another investigation? Like, do you remember after City got the Champions League ban overturned, there was something else in Der Spiegel about that didn't look great for City, but it was just like, there's no way UEFA have got the stomach to go after them again. Like, there's just no way. And you almost think, even if there were other emails or there were other elements that weren't investigated, there now could be. It's like, are the Premier League going to go through that again? So, yeah, I mean, this is what I was saying. There's only two real outcomes, but that either one spawns another million separate.
The after effects ripple effects
and everything. Yeah. It's absolutely crazy, isn't it? It's mad what being a football fan kind of involves these days.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get to that in a second, but I just thought of when you said, when you were talking about the Super League then, and maybe City don't get invited. Here's a reference for you. It's that moment in The Simpsons where the Stonecutters reform as the No Homers, the ancient and mystic order of the No Homers.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like that. I mean, I don't remember that, but that sounds exactly like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just finally, Sam, because I'm aware that we still have Spurs to dissect as well, which we'll come to in a second. This shouldn't be on fans, should it? This shouldn't be on fans to have to defend all this. And to, like, ultimately, I got into football because I wanted to watch my football team. And that's ultimately why whatever happens after this, and whether City are guilty or not guilty, or whether City are continuing to be dominant in English football, or whether they end up at the bottom of League Two and are scrapping for whatever, I'll still be there with my season ticket because that's what I want to do. Why are fans having to deal with this now? Why should fans have to deal with this? Because we shouldn't, should we?
No, but you know, this is how people are raised with football all around the world. You know, people bring their kids up to jokingly like boo and jeer like an opposition player on the TV. Like it's only a joke, but you kind of brought up that, you know, you need to go to football with your dad. You need to support the same club as your dad. Obviously not everyone does. I don't, or didn't anyway, you know, either way, however you want to put it. Like you're supposed to do this. You can't, you know, it's the whole thing of you can change your family, your wife, your job, whatever, but you can't change your football team. It's the old thing of, oh, you know, football's not just a matter of life and death. It's more important than that. It's all these things. Like people's whole personalities are built around the football club they support. It's built on, you know, you live 2 hours away.
You don't need to tell me that, mate.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, and this is normal. This is normal across the world. It's not a UK thing. It's normal across the world. Like, and you know, people, I was on the train into the Tottenham Stadium the other day, and there was two Spurs fans. Well, there was three Spurs fans, but two of them were from Norwich. It's 2 hours for them to get to home games, and they go to all the away games as well. And you just think, again, look, people listen to this podcast. This is your life, you know. But it's like, how do people spend so much money and commitment and time to doing this? And it's just completely normal. And then my point being, this is drilled into us from a young age, and football stirs emotions in a way that very few other things can. Obviously, sport does that, but football is right up there in doing that. It's the most popular sport in the country. It's the most popular sport in the world. And so the end goal of that is it's a 24/7 thing now. The way the internet's drawn everyone together, everything is so tribal. Everything is so my club's great and your club's shit, regardless. I mean, do you remember the Evra and Suarez thing?
Yeah.
It was dreadful. It was awful. Like, it was just purely tribal on both sides. Awful. It was the absolute pits. And I don't want anything like that to ever have to happen again, because it was just horrible in terms of where football tribalism can lead you. But this is the logical conclusion of these passions. Like, I wrote about, you know, I did a bit on Argentina during the World Cup, and I did a bit before. I was saying about how they were going into the World Cup with more kind of, you know, more enthusiasm and hope and expectation than since 2002 when Bielsa was manager. And I was like, but you know, with Argentina, obviously it turned out well, but you know, with Argentina, all that passion and all that love they've got, Christ, it goes the other way quickly if you don't win. And it's that thing, you know, like obviously we're not as passionate and it's not the same way of living football in the UK as it is in South America. But in terms of that love for the club, it's all still there. So why has it got to the stage where fans feel the need to defend it? Like, it's part of it, isn't it? It's that you're told that your football club is the most important thing in your life. You know, your football club, you're supposed to support them through thick and thin. And then people conflate that with, I need to support them even when they've done bad things, or they just don't see the bad things. And I think that's fair to say, isn't it? People just do not see bad things when it comes to their football club. Not all people, clearly. But that's why, you know, there's an element of football fans online. It's funny, like, you know, when people talk about, oh, who could win the league, or whether it's City or whether it's Arsenal, whether it's Man United, they go, oh yeah, but they're fans. It's like every club's fans online are dickheads, basically, because they're the noisiest ones. Like, you will not find a club who could win the Premier League, win the Champions League, who do not have that element that you don't like, because this is the element that go online and go and hunt people down and pick fights and defend the club to the hilt and all this kind of stuff. That is there for every club, because that's just how we are as people. We're drilled into us that football is the most important thing, that our club's the most important thing, and that, you know, some people kind of conflate that with doing no wrong. And then, you know, you won't have people who are football fans and kind of make them all kind of inflammatory statements online that don't do that in other walks of life. You know, these are people who will do that.
Come on,
related to anything else, you know, politics or, well, you know, anything that falls under politics, whether it's gender or religion or whatever. You know, these are people who are going to have loud opinions on anything, and then it just gets blown up by football. So a fairly long-winded answer to that, but no, it shouldn't be for fans to have to defend. It shouldn't be on fans to defend them. You know, it's never going to make a difference anyway, like we were saying earlier on. Even if City get found not guilty, other fans are not going to go, oh, you know what,
okay, then,
fair play to Manchester City. We've labelled them all this time, and we were completely in the wrong to do so. It's just going to carry on.
Like, there'll just be other reasons.
It's just, completely, it's just, you know, so much football discourse is just completely unreasonable.
Yeah. Well, we'll follow this throughout. Unfortunately, we won't have podcasts to do it on, Sam, but you'll be covering it as it comes up on The Athletic. So, you know, we can keep across it that way.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Let's kind of pivot now to the game against Spurs. As usual, City lost against Spurs at Spurs. So we're going to get into that now. We actually recorded this on Monday before the news broke of the charges that the Premier League were bringing towards City. So you need to see kind of, like, just keep that in mind as we talk about kind of the extents of the problems. Here's what was said.
While I'm getting these 1920 vibes now, like, quite strongly, that's also helpful in the sense that a lot of the stuff I've seen online and speaking to mates and stuff about, oh, this is bad and, oh, this needs to change, exactly the same as people were saying 2 years ago. And ultimately, it got much, much better. So that perspective helps as well because, yeah, okay, it might be, you know, it might be, inverted commas, bad season if City finished second and God knows what's going to happen in the Champions League. Because if they do play like that, they could get knocked out by Leipzig. But then, you know, I don't want to be stuck in that moment of negativity because they can easily push past them. But it's, you know, all the kind of, oh, Guardiola's, well, you know, to exaggerate, because I've not seen anybody say this, like, losing the plot or whatever and all this kind of stuff. Because I do think he seems to be kind of stuck in that funk a bit. You know, like in 2019-20 when it was just like, well, Laporte's injured, Fernandinho's playing centre-back and Otamendi, they need protection. Rodri can't really protect them on his own, so we're going to chuck in another midfielder there. We're going to funnel everything down the middle. And it's not pretty. It's not even especially effective, but it's the most effective way that we can play.
The domino effect.
And it just seemed like he couldn't get out of that for a while. And that might be the case at the moment. But at the same time, there's just loads of stuff going on behind the scenes. Like, I mean, have you got something you want to discuss specifically first, or should we go into the lineup? Because I think the lineup is a good kind of segue point.
I mean,
here,
we can start with that. I mean, when you say stuff going on behind the scenes, I'm just intrigued what you mean by that and what is going on.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. People are like, oh, what's going on? It's like, oh, fucking hell. We've been discussing this for a couple of weeks and Guardiola told the whole world. Like, but in terms of the lineup, now, I'm sorry, but this is the result didn't go well, so the lineup was bad situation. I saw the lineup went to meet some mates outside the ground, didn't have data. So it was only until around halftime that I realized that people weren't happy with the lineup. When I saw a tweet saying, you know, the fact that Rodri has made a mistake does not mean the lineup was bad. And I was like, okay, so obviously people have been moaning about the lineup then.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the lineup and I was like, well, okay. Like, the thing is, basically, he's played the players who are in form and have played well, have played the most recently and have played the best recently. Like the whole, leaving De Bruyne on the bench. Personally, I can't criticise him for that. I can't even say, oh, maybe that was a wrong decision. Because I probably would have. I've been saying De Bruyne has been shocking for weeks. Well, in fact, we said, was it after the derby? I was like, he probably needs to come out of the team for a bit. I can't complain that he's then taken De Bruyne out of the team. Like he did, by the way, against Spurs last time. And also, what did I say about Alvarez last week after the Arsenal game? I was like, he obviously gives the team a spark. Absolutely fine. Like, no problem with that. I had no problem with that. And then the centre-backs. The thing is, if Guardiola had played De Bruyne, Diaz and Laporte, and City had a loss yesterday in the same way, which is they're highly capable of, just because of, I don't know what happens at Spurs, but it's that
thing.
If he'd have picked those players, I'm sure there'd have been people saying, oh, he's picking names and reputations over form players, because Laporte only started X amount of games out of the last 10, and Diaz has barely played since the World Cup, and De Bruyne has not been playing well. I'm convinced it's one of those where you can't win.
But this is what this is what I'm struggling with as well, because my ultimate read from the game was that you could have picked any 11 from what City have got going on at the moment, and you would have got the same performance. It was a game that was symptomatic of the problems that City have had this season, not the lineup that he's picked.
There's just no real argument for those players who are left on the bench to come in.
The only one that shocked me, and I got an answer to that pretty quickly, was that I really wanted to see Foden in the team, but he was ill, so he just couldn't be there.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing is, you could say Walker's obviously not. Walker's probably in the same camp as Laporte, and if you bring in Walker, why can't you bring in Laporte? But it was obviously the kind of problems at fullback. And to be honest, again, in terms of, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm being consistent. Like, on the way down to the game, I was like, I'm sure Walker will play today. Like, it just feels like the kind of game to start bringing him back in, because if you don't bring him back in soon, then he's never coming back in. And obviously, given the problems they've got. And to be honest, I thought, I'd said Lewis has looked 18 in the last couple of games. But to be fair, he obviously played yesterday. And I thought he was good. Like, it was difficult circumstances for him, but I thought he was good. So Walker coming in didn't surprise me. I thought that was fine. And then you got the situation where he moved Lewis to left back. I'm sure I heard, not necessarily in the build-up before the game, but maybe last week, did somebody suggest, is this something people have seen online? Did you say,
I asked, could he do it and step inside like Cancelo used to?
Yeah. I didn't really have a problem with that. I was like, well, Lewis has been good, hasn't he? I mean, look, okay, I did think he'd looked 18 recently, but Guardiola clearly trusts him. Of all the players who could pop up at left back now, I don't mind seeing it. And again, I'm sure people are sitting there screaming, going, well, Ake's been playing well at left back. Why didn't he leave him there? But it's like, look, you've got to look at the situation with the centre backs who are on the bench. Diaz has not played in a long time. Laporte has got this situation going on where, if, what was last weekend? So it was the Arsenal game. Cancelo didn't play. If City had a loss, and people were saying, why isn't Cancelo playing on a Sunday? And then on a Monday, sold to Bayern Munich, you'd be like, oh yeah, I get it. And it's that kind of thing with Laporte. I'm not saying Laporte's been massively disruptive, although that said, I don't know if he's been massively disruptive, but I know, because of how things have worked out in the past and how things are going at the moment, is Guardiola doesn't see him as in the best kind of, as the best candidate to play.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, Akanji, since he signed, he didn't play in the Villa game. That was his first game as a City player. He didn't play in the Villa game, and he started every single Premier League game since. Now, Akanji is very aggressive to the point where I think sometimes he can wander upfield and leave spaces behind him. But he's clearly trusted. He clearly plays a lot. And again, if Diaz had played and not played well, or, been aggressive and wandered upfield, which, because it's the same brief. Like, I think Akanji's maybe got a... Do you remember when Rodri signed and the whole thing was he's got to learn when to push up and challenge.
Yeah, when to not, yeah.
And hang back and not leave spaces. I think basically, look, Akanji's kind of got to do that, which is fine. But if Diaz had come in and had a bad game, you'd be like, well, hold on, Akanji's played every game for City. But yeah, sorry, he's played every game for City since then in the Premier League, and Guardiola rates him. And Ake has been, he hasn't just played left back, but and he's been their best defender. So again, I think it's just pure. I mean, look, it's not hindsight, because obviously people were concerned about it beforehand, but I don't think there was, I didn't have any reason to be concerned. And look, if you've got your own gripes, that's fine. But I can't sit here and say he should have done this, should have done that, because I had no problem with it. And I think it makes sense. Yeah. And the only other one who, so we mentioned Walker, the only other one who maybe doesn't get in on form is Bernardo instead of Gundogan. But those two have kind of been a coin toss recently. Bernardo's not been at his best. Wasn't at his best yesterday, but you could kind of see what he had to do. He was kind of that number 10 presence, wasn't he? Because Alvarez was pretty much just another forward.
Yeah.
And he was that kind of number 10, link everything up. He just didn't have a good game. They're the only two you could maybe say, okay, well, they've not been on it recently, but kind of situation, circumstances dictated with Walker that he had to come in. And yeah.
Well, just quickly then
on Bernardo's coin toss.
Just quickly then on De Bruyne, because obviously named on the bench, we talked about his form recently. But I just wonder if it also played into the other criticism that came City's way on Sunday, which was they just weren't playing to Haaland. And I just wonder how much of the selection to not include De Bruyne was to try and mitigate the fact that Spurs are very, very good in the transitions, and the fact that, you know, you play too quickly up to Haaland, you play too quickly into them, you leave so much space. Like when I watched on the TV, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher were absolutely aghast that De Bruyne wasn't playing, and they were desperate to see him come in and kind of get the ball quickly forward.
And how did he do when he came on?
Well, I was going to say, as soon as he came on, Spurs kept getting more and more counter-attacks, and I just wondered if that was what was playing into Guardiola's thinking.
Possibly, I don't know. It's possible though, isn't it? And not just possible, but like I said before, De Bruyne has not really been playing that well. So I could see it. But then, yeah, that thing about being aghast that he's not played, it's like, just, have you been paying attention? Have you been watching City? Have you seen the fact that De Bruyne has got assists in a few games and gone, okay, he must be playing well? Like, it's just, we've said this before, and often De Bruyne has, this was probably after the derby when I was saying personally he should probably come out of the team for a bit. It was like that game he came on, he stayed on Anfield in the 2-2 when he scored that deflected goal in the end, but he was shocking. And Guardiola obviously kept him on because it's De Bruyne and he can do something, but I kind of think, you know, that's maybe fine for one game. And I think maybe Guardiola's done that quite a lot. He's always given him minutes when he's come back from injury or illness or whatever to get back to his best. But I just think at the moment, it's fine to keep out a player who's not playing well. And like, no, Alvarez is not an unpopular decision with anyone. Like,
no.
People want to see Alvarez. I mean, if we're digging deeper beyond that, I don't know if people, like, this is a bit straw man, but it's not. I'm not making an argument against people. I'm just trying to explain the situation. But when I wrote that article a couple of weeks ago that I tweeted last night about Haaland and fitting in, which obviously is another topic, I wrote about, you know, Guardiola wanting to balance out those players with pals, and those players who are kind of destabilizers, and you've got the pals players like Bernardo and Gundogan, Rodri, Grealish, Mahrez, and the stabilizers, you know, Foden, De Bruyne, Haaland, obviously, and Alvarez to an extent. And basically Guardiola. And maybe this is the whole big picture thing. This is maybe where we zoom out, and I'll put in the article as well, actually. I do think people should still read it if they haven't already, because it's still relevant to what's going on. It's massively relevant to what's going on. Maybe the big picture here is Guardiola has got too conservative about how to fit all these things together. Because this season's all about trying to fit Haaland in without having that extra man in the middle. They're trying to control games in a different way. They're trying to have the same outcomes as last season, same performances as last season in a completely different way. So it's a process. And now this whole, like, I don't know who said it, but I've seen that it was said on Sky Sports, you know, Haaland's picked the wrong club. It's like,
Carragher, yeah.
Well, this is why, you know, whenever I've discussed this, I could say we could be grown-ups about this and say, yeah, they're not as fluid as last season. And look, I can't sit here and preach and say it's going to be amazing. It's going to be fine, because maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not fine. But the fact he scored so many goals already and City haven't completely blown up, they're not as good. But there's just these little tweaks they're making. Like, why wouldn't you just think, okay, that's probably going to be fine, just based on everything that City have done in the last 3 years. Like, I've just got this faith that things will be fine because they always have been fine. And Haaland is good. City are good. The outcome at the moment isn't perfect. But of course they're playing differently to last season. Of course they've lost a bit of fluidity because they're trying to do things in a different way. So you just can't. It's like the whole Grealish thing. Like last season, oh yeah, he's wasting money, he doesn't fit in. It's like, well, give him a season at least. And it's this kind of process for the whole team now. They're playing in a different way. But obviously, the issues they've had recently, as I put in this article, the biggest issue they've had recently is all this attitude and post-World Cup funk and complaints and arguments and all that kind of stuff. The biggest problem, they're not playing like they did at Spurs because they can't get Haaland into the team. They're playing like they did at Spurs just because there's something, you know, there's just that tiny imperceptible difference where they're not quite as hungry as they were in the past. And
yeah, the sort of miasma in the air sort of thing.
But again, it's like I've been using Liverpool, and if Liverpool fans were listening to this, which is highly unlikely, they'd think I'm like using them as a punching bag, and I'm really not. But it's like, look, when Guardiola said it, I think he said 99.9%. And when I spoke to somebody about it, that's the number they use as well. They were like, you know, just echoing what he said. It was like, it's just that tiny thing, but it can add up to a big thing in football. But it's not that big because City aren't miles off it. City are not in Liverpool's situation. Look what can happen. This is a tiny issue, which is big in the context of City because they don't look as amazing as they have been. But it's, again, 1920 vibes. They weren't terrible then. They weren't good enough and they were frustrating and they put in performances like this. But I always say it whenever I talk about that team. They scored more than 100 goals and they kept the most clean sheets, but something was just a little bit off. It's not a disaster by any means.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of all this attitude stuff at the moment, and that's kind of added on an extra difficulty to the process of fitting Haaland into the team. But if you take all that away, before the World Cup, there were no real complaints about City and being off and all this. There were definitely quite a lot of fans who thought the performances were too slow, but it wasn't, you know, everyone in the media was kind of like, oh yeah, well, they're going to win the title, obviously. And it was just like taken as fact that they were going to win the title. Nobody thought that Haaland was the big problem until they've had all these other problems come in and layer onto it. Like, they weren't finding him yesterday. Like, you don't need to have Sky Sports tell you that they weren't finding him yesterday. It was obvious. They didn't find him in the derby. Guardiola said that was a problem. That is something they need to improve. But I mean, I don't want to be one of these people who just says, oh yeah, but, you know, like when Ronaldo was at United and he was top scorer, and like they had this discussion on Sky as well.
Yeah.
They'd have Roy Keane and he was like, well, he scored the most goals. Like, what are you in football to do? And then Carragher or whoever was like, you've got to do other stuff on the ball. He said, like, I would always say he had a disruptive impact at United and he was scoring goals, but that was kind of irrelevant. Okay, fine. Yeah, great. He's scoring goals, but he's taken away from the team performance. And I think maybe we've seen that since he's left. So I'm not one of these person who think, oh, if you score loads of goals, that's fine. That masks all the problems. So when I say Haaland scored loads of goals, it's clearly not a problem. Like, he has scored loads of goals. They're not massively, massively struggling.
He's beaten the golden boot tally for how many seasons now? It's like,
yeah, I don't know how many it is, but it's loads. Like, he's like, it would be the maddest thing in the world if he got 40 goals and City finished second. And that's speaking right now, that's very possible. City don't win the league and he gets 40 league goals, which would be mental. Like, nobody would have said that at the start of the year. But it's clearly not a problem. They're not struggling to find him overall. They have been struggling to find him in certain games.
Let's talk about the Haaland thing then, because the focus of the narrative after the game seemed to be about fitting Haaland in and playing up to Haaland. I mean, I wanted to put this to you. I want to make it particularly clear ahead of putting it to you that I don't agree with this, and I think it's a little bit ridiculous, but I do think it is worth mentioning in the whole conversation. Because some have seemed to suggest that Haaland isn't the sort of player that Guardiola wants. He would have preferred a Kane-style player instead, someone who would drop off and link up. And you've seen a little bit in the last few weeks of Haaland dropping in and trying to do a bit more link up. Ultimately, I just feel like I feel like this is more of a repeat of the Aguero situation, where maybe Aguero isn't the striker that Guardiola wanted, but he turned him into something that would work for the team.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. But look, it's not like Pep didn't want Haaland. I think Pep was very, very happy to have Haaland.
Yeah.
And he saw it as a challenge to get him into the team. I'm very happy to have Haaland. But it's not something I've mentioned, because in this whole can we be grown-ups about it thing, I did not want to put it in black and white. But if City had signed Harry Kane 18 months ago, I don't think they'd have had these problems. It'd have been perfect. He is the perfect striker for City. He's perfect striker for City. And I've always thought that, and I've always said that. But with Haaland, the kind of aim is, okay, it's not perfect now, but I mean, which signings are perfect? The thing is, Haaland is actually, it's more like Haaland's performing well and the team lesser, whereas normally the team's performing well and the new signing takes time to adjust. But obviously, because he's changed the dynamics, that does make sense.
Yeah.
But I just think that once that process kind of goes further down the line, and again, it's been massively derailed by all the recent problems with, you know, off the pitch and desire and whatever. Once that carries on, whether it's this season, whether it's next, I'd imagine they would, as long as it clicks, they will probably be a better team with Haaland in it than they would have been if they'd got Kane in it. There would have been less disruption if they'd got Kane. But I think the goal is to be
long-term,
a better team than they would have been. Like if they got Kane, they'd have won the league last year like they did anyway, and they'd probably be pissing it again this year. I'm sure of it. I mean, look, there's no way for me to back that up, but I'm sure of it. And obviously, that's not been the case this year because they've had to adjust to Haaland. So it is what it is. But, you know, will they get it right and blitz everyone in a completely different way to if they would have had Kane in the next couple of years? Yeah, I think quite possibly. Yeah, I think so. That's where I stand on it. But yeah, I mean, there's no secret that Guardiola loves Kane. They were desperate to get Kane. Absolutely desperate to get Kane. But it didn't happen.
So finally then for this week, Sam, looking ahead, it's Arsenal to come. There's Villa at the weekend. You know, just in terms of solutions to all of this kind of funk, because we said this about Guardiola at the beginning of 2021 when he signed his last new contract, that he needed to work stuff out. Like, how long will this take? Like, could this be a case of, like, he's nearly there and he just needs to kind of tweak a few things here and there? Or is it going to need a massive summer?
Yeah,
sort of reboot. Like, what do you think? What's your gut instinct?
It's so interesting. Well, it's so interesting because I maintain that these kind of post-World Cup problems, which are like for so many different reasons, you know, I can't really say them all, but so many, you know, like with the Cancelo stuff, we saw he came back from the World Cup pissed off because he didn't play in the group stages, and then that kind of snowballed. And then there's been other kind of players in different situations, and then it's all kind of combined. You know, they've got their own individual situations they've not been happy with. They've kind of combined to a bad spirit among the group, and I maintain that that's the biggest problem. And if City can shake that off, they'll go back to what they were early in the season, which wasn't quite as sharp and fluid and fast as prime City, but pretty good and capable of winning the league. And so if they can sort that those kind of mood problems out soon, then they can, you know, win enough games to win the title. Maybe that only comes with some kind of dressing room shakeup in the summer and they go again next season. Obviously, the difficulty is if we're talking about 19-20 comparisons, then we start thinking, well, actually, it went into the next season and they didn't change, did they? And only got halfway through the next season when there was some kind of spark, and can you rely on that happening again? But I don't know. I think this isn't a bigger mess than the whole season, though. I don't think it... Well, no, because, I mean, in a way, yeah, but it's not something... Look, I don't know if you've left this in the podcast or not, because we did talk about this on Monday. It's not something that's afflicted them for the whole season. It's something that's, for me, a very recent problem. And they do have the kind of the so-called issue to fix of how to get Haaland in the team and have that same control. Now that, but I've got every faith that they will do that. And that was the biggest issue of this season going into the World Cup. And it wasn't a big one that people even really noticed. They were just playing a bit slower. So in that sense, if you sort out this kind of discontent in the dressing room, and or maybe all it needs is you get to the end of the season, the players will go away on their holidays and they come back and some have left and new ones have come in and you go again and then it's fixed. Like, well, we've mentioned Liverpool as an example. Whenever Liverpool have had those drop-off seasons, they've come back strongly the next. And you would imagine with City, well, I would imagine with City, that if they can't sort this out before the end of the season, and it's just a case of they'll come back and be like, right, well, you know, because Guardiola keeps saying they're not hungry enough, they're not starving enough after so much success. But then if they see Arsenal winning the league, they'll go away, they'll be pissed off, and they'll come back and say, actually, I do want to win it. And I know Guardiola was saying it if they won three or four in a row and then the fifth and the sixth was different. So that maybe that means the second season is difficult as well. But you would like to think that if they can't physically do it through no fault of their own, they just can't physically get that spark back this season. Maybe, you know, seeing somebody else win those trophies would do that.
Would be,
and maybe some players leaving and other ones coming in would do that. And then it just goes back to, you know, can Guardiola gel everyone together on the pitch? Because you haven't really got the issue of grumpiness and bad moods and bad attitude and sadness and whatever's going on behind the scenes. I might be wrong. Personally, seeing as you've asked me the question and this is our podcast, I'd be surprised if this went on into next season. But, you know, I'd have to hold my hands up and say it did go on into the next season last time this happened. So I couldn't be 100% sure of that. But if you're asking me how long it's going to take, I'm not even ruling out it being this season. And, you know, maybe this Premier League stuff, this is one of the other unknowns. Maybe this kind of galvanizes them and, you know, it kind of jolts them into thinking of siege mentality. Let's all pull together and do it. Or, you know,
it depends just completely on the attitude. Yeah.
Because it might be another negative on a shitty season. You know, they're thinking, oh, this as well now. Like, what's the point? It depends entirely on their mood and how they kind of internalize it and then apply it to their, you know, training sessions and stuff like that. So maybe they don't win anything this season, and, you know, maybe that's the spark they need. Obviously, Guardiola's been trying to find that spark. That was the whole post-Tottenham thing last time. That he's trying to get that spark back again as quickly as he can. Everyone at the club is trying to work on that, so this season isn't a write-off. Maybe it ends up being that, but I don't think... I would be surprised. Again, I really could be wrong, but I would be surprised, purely in my opinion, if it got to this season was a write-off and then next season didn't get any better and then Guardiola left. I just don't see it ending like that. I'd have to say that, you know, they'll get it right.
Yeah. Now, if you didn't see on Twitter this week, then unfortunately next week's show is going to be our very last Why Always Us. So get in touch with questions or comments for the next show, because you literally don't have another chance after that. So either message me or Sam and we'll get it on to next week's show. But for now, that's the end of this week's Why Always Us. Thank you to Sam Lee.
Yeah, thanks very much. What a period. I mean, I just hope City beat Arsenal just so we can do one last podcast and it's not like... I'm sure everything will be fine. You know, they had 0.8 XG, which is quite good. Let's have a good ending next week.
Let's worry about that when we get to it, shall we? But for now, don't forget to sign up. You can sign up to The Athletic right now to read all of Sam's analysis on City for £2 a month for 12 months. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.